So we are up to Rosh Hashanah, Perek Dalid, Mishnah Zayin, Mishnah number 7. Let's see how far we get today. I doubt we'll finish today, maybe tomorrow. But let's see. Mishnah Zayin. Ha'over lifnei ha'teva b'yom tov shel Rosh Hashanah. The phrase ha'over lifnei ha'teva means what?
To pass before the teva.
Meaning to be what?
In shul.
To be the Hazan. That phrase, Ha'over Lifnei HaTeva, always refers to the person who is going to be the Hazan. So the person who's going to be the Hazan on Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah. Now there's two Tefillot and there's two Hazanim. There's one for Shaharit and there's one for Musaf. Says the Mishnah, Hasheni Matkia. The second Hazan, in other words, the Hazan for Musaf, he is the one who blows the Shofar. This comes to teach us that we do not blow the Shofar in Tefillat Shaharit. We blow the Tefillah in Tefillat Musaf. Now that's strange. Why is that strange? Because generally speaking, you would want to fulfill the mitzvah as soon as possible. Why delay to Musaf and do the blowing of the Shofar in Musaf and not blow the Shofar during Shaharit, right? Lulav and Etrog, right after you pray Shaharit, you say that, Halel that, and you do and you do Lulav and Etrog.
Regular day and a holiday. Musaf is the...
Right, so Musaf is the add-on tefillah, but let's take, again, take Sukkot for example, Lulav and Etrog. We don't do Lulav and Etrog during Musaf. Right after you pray Shaharit, you say Halel and you do Lulav and Etrog, right? So it would make sense, it would seem to make more sense to do the mitzvah in Tefillat Shaharit. So the question is, why did they develop the custom to blow the shofar during Tefillat Musaf rather than Tefillat Shaharit? So there's a couple of answers to this question. I'll read to you from the Kehati over here. He says, "But Gemara Mavuad, and the Gemara explains, Shebarishona, in the beginning, Hayu Tokim b'Tefillat Shaharit. They used to pray during Shaharit until Ad She'ira Ma'aseh. An incident happened. The Romans heard the Jews blowing the shofar on the Shaharit of Rosh Hashanah, and they thought that they were signaling a rebellion. Because, you know, blow the trumpets, we're going to war, right? So they heard them blowing the shofar in Shaharit of Rosh Hashanah, and they thought there was a rebellion, and the Romans came in and they killed everybody in the shul. Right, because they thought that there was a rebellion going on. So at that point, the rabbi said, "Ota sha'a." The rabbis decided, "Shiyu tokim b'tfilat musaf." They're going to blow the shofar only in tfilat musaf, because the enemies, mitoch shira'u ha'ayvim shoskim techila b'tfilah avekriyat ha'torah v'har kach tokim, hevinu shetikiot shel mitzvot hen v'lo shel menhama. The Romans, they assumed once they saw that the Jews had already started praying. And that they read the Torah, and they were doing everything, and then only then did they blow the shofar. They understood that they were blowing the shofar out of mitzvah, not out of rebellion. When the first thing they did when they woke up in the morning is blow the shofar, they thought they were starting a rebellion.
It was the first thing that it was at least an hour or two.
Not necessarily.
Into it, no?
Not necessarily. That's it. They woke up and they started blowing the shofar, right?
Without having an order of the slav?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe yes, maybe no. That was the source of this takana, of this institution, and so that's where it developed to only blow the shofar during Tefillat Musaf. And so we even continue to do this in order to continue that practice. Okay?
Longer Amidah, the Amidah that we did the other day.
That's the Musaf Amidah.
So that means also potentially it would have to be different for the Shacharit one. Was the Shacharit Amidah different?
No,
they blow Hayom Arat Allah, Hayom Arat.
No, so then what would have been done prior, when the times that they were doing it during Shaharit, they would probably just blow the shofar by itself, and then they would blow it again during the Musaf tefillah, on the Berachot or whatnot. Or it could have been that the tefillat Musaf was the tefillat Shaharit, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how it happened at that time. But once the custom developed to do it in Musaf, so everything's done in Musaf. Going back to the Mishnah, so the Mishnah now teaches us another halacha regarding the difference between the first and second Hazan. Ubishaata halel, on a day that halel is read, harishon makre et halel. It's always the first Hazan that reads halel. So from this Mishnah we learn that any day that you have Musaf where there's halel, the halel is always done in Shaharit from the first Hazan. And on the day of Rosh Hashanah, the tefillah of Musaf is the one that gets the blowing of the shofar. That's all this Mishnah is coming to teach us. Any questions? Okay. The next Mishnah talks about, Mishnah Het, it talks about the laws of Shofar And the day of Rosh Hashanah. In other words, can you violate Rosh Hashanah for the purposes of blowing the shofar? And so that's going to give us some parameters about what is not allowed, what is forbidden to do with the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Shofar shel Rosh Hashanah, Mishnah Chet. The shofar of Rosh Hashanah, en ma'avirin alav et ha-tehum. It is forbidden to carry the shofar outside of the border which is permitted to walk on the holiday. Right, so now we're not talking about Shabbat. Shabbat, shofar on Shabbat with Rosh Hashanah, we already said we don't do it because you're not allowed to carry. We already discussed that at the beginning of the chapter. Now we're talking about just on the day of Rosh Hashanah itself, when you're blowing the shofar. Okay. You're not allowed to bring a shofar from outside of the border that you're allowed to go, or you're not allowed to carry a shofar outside of the border. The concept of tom applies both to Shabbat and to holidays, 2,000 amah, about 3,000 to 3,500 feet. That outside of the city, that law applies both to Shabbat and to holidays. So the even though it's a rabbinic law, the rabbis did not allow you to carry the shofar outside of the tchum, even for the purposes of blowing the shofar. So even if you have a village, let's say, that's far out in the boondocks, and they need someone to blow the shofar for them, and you're going to carry and walk the shofar over there, which you're allowed to carry on the holiday, but you're going to carry it outside the tchum, the rabbis forbade that. They're not going to be able to fulfill the mitzvah of shofar. The rabbis, even with this, what's so amazing about this is that the rabbi's institution of tchum overrides the requirement of the mitzvah from the Torah to blow the shofar. You can say, well, what do you mean? Who cares about the rabbi's tchum? These people need to hear the shofar. It's a mitzvah from the Torah. No. The rabbis instituted that even you cannot violate their decrees even to perform a mitzvah from the Torah.
I hope they can explain why.
Huh?
Why
did they do that? Like, how could they? How do they have the power to do that? Yeah. The rabbis have the power to legislate that, because if not, then their decrees will not be taken seriously.
Have to draw the line somewhere.
Exactly. So, meaning, if I told you, oh, you're not allowed to carry the shofar outside the tchum,
right?
But oh, if you need to do it, if there's no other example, so then you can. So then nobody's gonna.
There's no one blowing it for the guy.
Huh?
There's no one blowing.
Okay, so what the rabbis wanted is you got to set that up from beforehand. If you know that there's no one blowing the shofar for you, you got to prepare from before the holiday to bring a shofar to your area, leave it there, do something. You have to prepare in advance. You can't just everybody just said, well, it's for the purposes of a mitzvah, then the rabbi's institution of tchum would not have no teeth. People would be, you know, treating it in a very lackadaisical kind of way. Right? So in order to uphold their institution and to make it something serious in the minds of the people, the rabbis had the authority to say, even in the case of fulfilling a mitzvah, you're not allowed to.
On Shabbat, it's Doraita?
What? No, it's always Derabanan.
Traveling outside the 3,000?
Traveling outside the 2,000 amot, for our intents and purposes, we'll say it's Derabanan. There's a bit of a disagreement. Okay. There's a conversation about it. Yud Bet Meal is also a conversation. But for the most part, we're going to assume it's Derabanan.
On Shabbat.
Yeah, on Shabbat and on holidays. The concept of tchum is derabanan. And so the rabbis are putting that even in the face of the mitzvah. Ve'en mefakehin alav et hagal. If let's say a shofar is buried underneath rubble, underneath the building collapsed or something collapsed and the shofar is underneath it. You want to pull off all the things to get the shofar. But that's esurim derabanan. It's mukzeh, all of those things. You're not allowed. You're not allowed to dig up a shofar on the holiday in order to be able to use it. Lo olin ba'ilan. Let's say the shofar is on a tree. Can't climb the tree on the holiday. That's asur midrabbanan. You're not even to get the shofar. You're not allowed to ride on an animal to go get a shofar.
Right.
Forbidden. You're not allowed to float take a raft on the water in order to be able to retrieve a shofar.
They just exceptioned one form of technical violation.
What do you mean?
You could bring the shofar that
day. No, all of these things
could
are...
Could you take a shofar from your... table in your house, just pick it up, bring it to the shofar?
Of course.
But that's one, that's a carry, you know?
You're allowed to carry on the
right, I've seen that's one, they specify, they allowed one specific violation to be...
Well, carrying on the holiday in general is permissible. For anything.
Any holiday.
Any holiday.
Any holiday.
Except Yom Kippur is not a holiday, Yom Kippur is a surah, it's like Shabbat. But Rosh Hashanah, Sukkot, carrying is permissible on the holiday.
They allowed...
No, carrying is permissible across the board. Now, you're only allowed to carry for something that you need, right? You can't carry for preparation for after the holiday or something like that. It has to be something that you need.
Pushing your kid in the shoulder?
Yeah, that's allowed.
You need, because you need to bring the kid.
Even without an Eruv. Yeah, it's 100% allowed. Yeah,
did they
absolutely.
Did they make that one exception from Rosh Hashanah? It's like, no. Okay, now the whole thing
no.
is like that.
Or this is already in Mishnayot and Masechet Beitzah. They allowed carrying across the board, right? So what we're discussing here is that they put limits on what you're allowed to do to retrieve a shofar. You're not allowed to violate any rabbinical decrees in the process of retrieving a shofar. Ve'en hotchin oto ben bedavar shehu mishum shevut u'ben bedavar shehu mishum lo ta'aseh. You're not allowed to cut the shofar in order to fix it or to make it blow, you know, nicely or whatever it may be, because that's fixing the utensil. That's forbidden. Whether it's something that cutting it is only asur mishum shevut, whether it's only a derabanan to cut it, whether it's something that's asur from the Torah to cut it, doesn't make a difference. Whichever utensil you're using, some utensils you're not allowed to cut from the Torah, some utensils you're not allowed to cut midirabanan. Any of those utensils, both cases, are still forbidden to use in order to fix the shofar to make it usable on Rosh Hashanah. You would have had to have done that from before.
Could you clean it?
That's the next line. Aval im ratzah liten letocho mayim o yayin, if he wanted to put inside of it water or wine to kind of clean it out or to smoothen it in order to make it blow well, yiten, that's permissible. That you could do. That's not considered fixing it. The shofar works. You're just making it a little bit better and making it work properly. That's permissible. En me'akevin et ha'tinokot militkoa, ava mit'asekim imahem ad she'ilmedu. We do not prevent young children from blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, not to fulfill the mitzvah. We're talking about a situation where they're training. I don't know. I like it. Right, blow the shofar, practice, cute, right? Whatever it is, they want to practice learning how to blow the shofar. It's Rosh Hashanah. We don't prevent them from doing that, even though you can make the case that you're limited in blowing the shofar only for the purposes of the mitzvah. Meaning on Rosh Hashanah, you're allowed to blow the shofar, obviously, because that's the mitzvah. But to just randomly go out into the street and just blow for the sake of blowing, that you're not allowed to do. That's forbidden. You're only allowed to blow when it's for the purposes of the mitzvah. So you'll make the claim over here, if my child is blowing and who says that that's for the purpose of the mitzvah? Why should I allow that? Says the Mishnah, no, it's permissible.
Let's say the guy who's blowing you in the shul wants to practice outside.
That's necessary. That's fine. If he's practicing and it's necessary for the mitzvah, it's permissible. But just randomly, it would be asur. Right? So, en me'akevin et ha'tinokot minitkoa. We do not prevent the children from blowing the shofar and practicing and training. And furthermore, aval mit'asekim imahem ad she'ilmedu. We can even help train them, right? We can even show them what to do. Hey, blow it like this, do it like this, put it in your mouth here. You know, you want to put your tongue this way, whatever it may be. You're allowed to even coach them and show them how to do it yourself, right? And so that they can learn and train. So all of that is permissible on the holiday of Rosh Hashanah. V'hamit'asek. Okay, bye. Before we get to that, the Mefarshim over here say, this is even the case on Shabbat.
Practicing?
Yeah.
Permitted.
If a child wants to teach himself how to blow the shofar and he's usually doing it on Shabbat,
like
that's also permitted.
I like the shul, but they're learning downstairs, so whoever leaves just.
Okay. Yeah. Right. He says shehigiu lechinuch. The Rabbi Ovadia says en me'akivin et ha'tinok shehigiu lechinuch. If they reach the age of training, afilu b'Shabbat. Even on Shabbat, we allow them to train them to learn how to do the mitzvah. Shehigiu melumadim litkoa b'yom tov shel Rosh Hashanah. So they should know how to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and we can even help train them. Now you'll say, how can we do that? You're not allowed to blow the shofar on Shabbat. You might come to carry it. The rabbis here said there's no gezerah.
Might come to carry it, not because it's like music.
Right. So over here we said that there's no gezerah. There's no decree that there's a fear that you're going to come to carry it. Why? Because when are you going to come to carry it? When a person has to do the mitzvah, right? If it's Rosh Hashanah, Shabbat, and a person is all in, you know, gazed up because he wants to fulfill the mitzvah, right. So that's when we'll say, oh, a person will lose his head and he'll carry the shofar even on Shabbat, Rosh Hashanah, because he wants to fulfill the mitzvah. Okay. And so that's why we didn't allow it on Shabbat, Rosh Hashanah. That's why we outlawed it. But if it's just a random Shabbat where the person's not, in fear of not fulfilling the mitzvah, he's just practicing with his kid, he's not going to come to carry it for Amot B'Rishut Terabim because he knows that there's no issue of the mitzvah. And so that's the explanation over here regarding allowing them to train and to practice with them on Shabbat, even if it's not Rosh Hashanah. Last line of this Mishnah, v'hamit'asek lo yatza. Someone who is blowing the shofar without intention whatsoever of the mitzvah. He's just blowing, right? Heke, right? Or practicing. And someone else hears him, lo yatza. Well, no, we're talking about Rosh Hashanah,
okay.
Right? Someone who's mitasek, guy wakes up in the morning, Rosh Hashanah, he starts blowing the shofar. He's practicing. He's not doing it for the intention of the mitzvah. He lo yatza. He doesn't fulfill his obligation. No. We already said, person has to have explicit kavanah in order to fulfill the mitzvah. Furthermore, hashomea min hamitasek, someone who hears from someone who is mitasek, from somebody who is just training or practicing or blowing randomly, but not for the purposes of the mitzvah, also lo yatza. Even though the listener might say, oh, I want to fulfill my mitzvah, as we've illustrated before, both parties, the blower of the shofar and the listener to the sounds of the shofar, both parties must have kavanah in order to fulfill their mitzvah of hearing the shofar.
And again, the guy who hears it, he has kavanah, he's outside of this guy next door. He's like, you know, I'm not going to go to shul today. I want to hear from the outside of my house. I'm just going to sit in my backyard.
Okay.
He hears you blowing it.
Where? In the shul?
In the shul.
So the assumption that we said earlier was that if it's being blown in the shul, in the Bet Knesset, so the person blowing has in mind to fulfill anybody who may hear the mitzvah.
Fine, so the guy next door, he hears it.
Yes.
No problem, he hears it. But he didn't hear that beracha. It doesn't matter because it's just the action.
Correct. Right? You don't have to hear the beracha.
Same thing with the tefillin scenario that we did. Okay, just make
it beracha sure. Is a rabbinical add-on.
Right.
A person still fulfills the mitzvah with doing it even if he doesn't make the beracha.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, I think we'll pause with that. And tomorrow we'll wrap up the Masechet. We have one more Mishnah, and we'll begin Mishnayot Masechet Mo'ed Katan. Baruch Adonai Olam. Amen v'amen.